Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzino, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good today, Jake. Look what I got in my hands here. Big shout-out. We got the real estate jerky on, but we also have Ryan's jerky here. I love this. Ricky'sJerky.com, wicked garlic over here, Jake. We've been
Nothing
talking
like
politics
it, man.
For the
Nothing
last 30 like minutes. This is going to be a great podcast. For me, what's going on in the economy right now, what's going on with the housing right now, it's all intertwined. What's going on with interest rates, what's going on with inflation. We're going to be talking about all of that. And we're going to be talking about Ed's book, I think, which is really, really important, about buying a home and becoming financially free through buying a home. So, Jake, let it rip.
Word to mother. As Gino said, today's guest is the founder and CEO of Lending for Living, a proud veteran of the U.S. Navy and passionate about financial literacy and real estate education. His latest book, Financial Freedom, breaks down how owning property can create a lifetime of wealth. I completely agree with that. So without further ado, Ed Parcoe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, it is our pleasure. Let's get to know each other again a little bit. Share with us again your background and how you got started in business.
Let's see. I'm originally from the Central Valley of California, which before that I was in Colorado. But I joined the Navy to see the world, got to see San Diego, went down there. And when I got out, I got in the mortgage industry. And ever since then, I enjoyed numbers and money. And so that's why I stayed in the industry. And now I'm back up in Northern California. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is because I run into so many people who want to buy a home, but people in my industry give people wrong information a lot. And I want to make sure that they get the right information. That's why I wrote the book.
Ed, what's the $70,000 mistake in the book? Let's dive into that, because I think, like you just said, there's a lot of bad information out there. So share that story with us.
So in the, I don't have it in front of me, but basically what it was is I had a real estate agent come in, and we were talking about one of our clients, and when he explained to the person about what they should do to buy a home, he didn't explain to him why they should buy at this point in time. And what they didn't do is they didn't act on purchasing at that time. And then in California, what might not happen everywhere else, we have such appreciation that within a year, the house went almost doubled in price, up 70%. And she could have afforded the house before, but then she didn't, because she was not. I tell people, do the T account, the old Ben Franklin, pros and cons of buying or why you should do it. And you go through the different things. And he didn't know how to sell. And that was one of the other issues in our industry, is everybody thinks they're just a loan officer or a real estate agent, when in really you're a salesperson. You need to help people understand what they're getting into. And that's, so I also started a sales company on top of it because of that.
So why don't people understand that, the basic financial understanding? I mean, that's something that's so important in life, buying a home, creating equity, and even in your industry, why don't they understand that?
I don't know. I think one of the biggest issues is we're not taught that in school, right? What do they teach in school? They don't even have home ec anymore in school, right? Or any of that kind of stuff. They don't have any of the auto mechanics, auto body, welding, any of those things that you need to learn, understanding stuff. But they also don't teach you financial literacy in any school these days. And that's, I think it's so important. We need to bring that back. And we need to explain to people why a home will help you. Because a lot of people, the other reason I also do a radio show, and the reason I started the radio show was because so many people saw their family lose their home from 2008 through that whole period of time. And they're like, I never want to own a home because I watched my parents, lose their home, lose everything. And that's wrong. The easiest way to build personal wealth is through home ownership. And you guys know that.
Ed, I got to hold it right there, because that's a very interesting thought. I have some stats for you right now. I'm going to go to the videotape. So all these kids going through 08, mom and dad lost their home. Oh, woe is me. I don't want to own a home. Right. I don't go to home ec. I don't know how to fix this stuff up. I'm a deadbeat loser on my parents' couch. I'm not summing it up for everybody, and I'm being a smartass. But check it out. So 08, people lost their homes. It was stressful for them. They couldn't get over it. Here we go. Disney, 7,000 employees cut this year. I'm gonna run down the tech list. Salesforce, 8,000 employees. Accenture, never even heard of them, 19,000. Microsoft, 10,000. Facebook, 21,000. Twitter, 7,500. And Amazon, over 100,000 people. So if you're one of those poor souls in a tech job that doesn't know how to use their hands, I got some news for you here. Maybe there's an opportunity to go buy your first fixer-upper starter home with that severance that you got, and learn to fix it up and roll into the next one. Because historically in America, for the last probably 100 or so years, people's parents, including mine, including Gino's, including my grandparents, bought a small home. They stayed in it for many years, hopefully fixed it up, sold it for more, and then went to another modest home, fixed it up, and did the same thing. This was a wealth-building playbook for generations of Americans that we've lost. And there's, you know, a tremendous wealth gap now between baby boomers and millennials. And if you look at one of the biggest differences, baby boomers hold a lot of real estate compared to the millennials that are renting an apartment. And that's where that wealth gap is coming from. So, gang, look, own where you live if you can. I think you can start small and build off of it. And you know, to Ed's point, if you're in California, you're going to see nice appreciation.
Well, I see that it's happening everywhere. But all right, since 1941, we've had 73 years up in home values, 7 years down, and 1 year flat since 1941. So what does that tell you?
The housing market. You're up 60 years.
Yeah, you're up 73 years. But anyway.
Well, I'm saying that like 73, like, you know, you're netting 60 out of the 70. Right. Yeah, regardless, we're good.
Right. So I think a lot of people, that's why everybody's like, I'm waiting for the bubble. I'm waiting for this. I'm waiting for that. And the bubble's not, the only bubble we're seeing is the opportunity bubble, which means you're going to lose out on getting the house at a very good price, having the seller work with you right now. And yes, you can always refinance and get a lower rate going forward.
And there's an inventory difference too from 08 till now. I think there was a bit more inventory looking at 08 when the housing market crashed, and we haven't rebounded or kept up with demand. So that's another thing to take in consideration if you're looking at buying a house right now.
Well, let me just answer that. So in 08, we had 3.5 million houses on the market, and they were building homes still. And we have nothing close to that right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Ed, I love the book because you get into some history in it, and let's talk about the FHA, why it was created. You said back in the 1930s, 90% of the people back then were renters. So let's discuss that, like that fear of people. They were losing their houses during the Depression. They were getting their money called. Talk about that real quick and that mindset, because I think it's important for people to learn a little bit about the history.
Well, and then back then, we didn't have long-term 30-year programs. We didn't have 15-year programs. You know, it's like if you ever watch the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. You know, you go into a bank and you shake a hand and they give you money, and it's the money from someone else is buying that house. Well, there were only usually 4 to 5 year notes, and they could call that thing due and payable at any time for any reason. And so that's what happened during the Great Depression, is people would come up and go, we want to be paid off. And they're like, we have no money. And they're like, get out. And that's why the government created, you know, FHA and came with those programs. And then since then, everything's changed drastically to where we have the programs now. It was to protect the people to not have to get kicked out.
It was a rent to own program.
Well, the problem is most houses were so cheap back then. But if you look at wage wise, it's pretty much the same numbers as now all the way through. I mean, everybody's like, everything's so much more expensive. Yes, but everybody makes so much more money now. I mean, the average person, the non-millennial, the younger ones, 27 younger, are making way more money than their parents did at the same time.
And I want to break up that point, because it's, when you go back and you read history books like Nickerson's book, How I Turned 5,000 into 5 Million, the common complaint was, I can't find money for the down payment. Whether the house was $20,000 back in the 1970s, you still needed $2,000. They couldn't find money for the down payment. That's always been the problem. It's not a today problem. It's a forever problem. And I think that's something that we have to dwell on. And go into the numbers right now, because we were doing it before we started hit the record button, because it's really important for people to understand that if you're going to wait, prices may go down in the next year, 2 years possibly, but they're not going to stay down because we have a supply and demand issue.
Right. And for us, I don't see them going down in California. So the problem that most people hear is they say, okay, the median price went down, right? The median numbers went down 2% or 5% or 10%. Well, what's a median? That means more lower price houses were being sold, and that's where the median is. We're not talking, I had a $500,000 house. It is now worth $450,000. That's not the case. Lesser price homes are selling because people can't afford the same payment they could at a 2.99 interest rate. That payment is a lot cheaper than it at a 5.5 interest rate. And that's the difference. So people are buying lower price homes. And that's the issue. And a lot of people don't realize that. The news people get on, the whole thing about how everything's dropping, not true. I know in some places like Austin, Texas, because of everybody bought all these Airbnbs. And any of you live in Texas?
Tennessee.
No, we don't. Florida and Tennessee.
So if you know anything about the tax base in Texas, so it's 3% property tax, right? Every year, if you own that house as and you live there, your house, whatever your house value goes up, it can raise 10% of that, your tax base. Okay.
Wow.
If it's an investment property, there is no limit. So all these people bought these Airbnbs
feeding frenzy
in Austin, and then the houses doubled, and now their taxes doubled. And the average person who buying residence in Texas, your tax base will double every 10 years.
Oof.
So you really need to look where you go to buy things, what really is going on. And I know it kind of off subject there, but it's just
no, I want to jump in here for a second, though, because I'm an economic deserter from New York. And I based my criteria when I left New York back in 2011 on a few things. I was looking for no state income tax. I wanted better weather, and I wanted low property taxes. So I was looking at Florida, I was looking at Tennessee, and I was looking at Texas. Texas fell off because I felt the property taxes were too high. Florida was a little bit further, and they're still a little bit higher than Tennessee. So I went from a pure economic and weather play, and that's how I ended up in the volunteer state. Just saying.
Well, no, but most people don't look. I mean, every leaving California, I'm going to Texas. It's so much better. No, it's not.
Well, it's, well,
I mean, politics wise, it is. But, but if you're if you own a home, and
you're
still
paying less in taxes though, when it comes down to the state income, and you start going down.
Oh, from that perspective, he's saying yes.
That's I say yes, but I'm saying, but if you own a piece of property and you go to retire, you might not be living in that property. You might have to sell that property because you can't afford the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. You really need to look.
Ed, you make a really good point also. Talk about the refi. Of you said 10 out of the 12 trillion has been refi. That's another really important point, because people are like, well, I'm sitting on a home. I may not sell this home. So let's talk about that real quick for someone thinking about buying a home.
All right. So on all the properties out there, a third of all houses are free and clear. Okay. There's no mortgages on it. The other
how many
five,
was
eight,
that? A third.
A third.
Wow. Okay.
So the other 6.66, whatever, I guess if you don't like that number, sorry. You have about, there was 12 trillion of mortgages on them. We refinanced 10 trillion of that during 2020 and 2021. So if you put 10 trillion people mortgages, you know, in 2%, you know, 2.75, 2.99, 3.25, nobody's thinking about moving. So before, if you had getting a baby, right? I have a baby, we're having another one, we need a bigger house. They go, no big deal, we'll move up. Well, now they're going, okay, if I move up, that's going to cost me $1,000 or $1,500 more a month for just a little bit bigger house. I think those kids can share the same room now, you know? So it's back to where it is in the 50s and 60s where they're like, shove them in the room. We don't care. We're not going to, you know, go
get
buy
a treehouse.
Yeah. So until rates get back into the threes and fours, we're going to see existing home sales not come on the market as much. It's just going to be people who have to move, or that third who don't have a mortgage are the ones who are who could be moving very easily.
Ed, can you talk about where rates are going? Where do you think they're going to be headed in the near future, where they're going right now, and how that's going to affect the market?
Well, we're so focused on inflation, right? That's what we look at. So every time the CPI or PPI, that's a consumer, producer price index, consumer price index come out, they look to see where the inflation numbers are. If that comes where those are going down, rates are dropping, right? It doesn't matter what the Fed does, doesn't really react to the mortgage rates. I know everybody thinks they go the same way. If you look, mortgage rates went through the roof way before the Fed started tightening because that they're independent of the Fed. What the Fed does is the overnight rates, the banks, the HELOCs, the car loans, those kind of things, whatever's based off the prime rate and those kind of things, the Fed funds rate, overnight rates, the banks, those kind of things. So what I see is going forward, I see rates going down. We've seen that in the last couple of months. The highest I saw the rates in the last year and a half was 7.25 for a conventional loan. Right now we're looking at a 5.99, and just to give an example of what Fannie Mae puts out there, I don't want my industry people coming after me saying you quoted a rate without APR. I'm just throwing you what Fannie Mae would say the rates are. So, and then FHA and VA.
He's lending at 5.5%, folks. He just said it.
Yeah. There, and those are out there. It's just, and I see rates
at 4.5.
or an it's coming, but I don't think we're going to be there until next year. I think what we need is we need this recession. We're going to fall flat on our face. We're not going to have it easy, you know, not going in recession, because you can't have one side trying to fix it while the other side is spending. We talked about this before we started. If you're on a budget, you have to have both people on the budget to fix the problem and get under control. Right now, we don't have both people on the same. I'm not going to blame mommy, but daddy's out there spending with his credit card and he's not getting on a budget. And Fed the mom is trying to tell him, we need to get on a budget. We need to stop this.
Yeah, but Fed the mom, here's the interesting thing. So Jay Powell is up in 2026. They're going to get this guy out of there because he's the problem. He's like the stodgy old man saying, no, the rates are going to go up. We're going to get this inflation under control. He's going to get a target on his back. Okay. And because eventually, you know, whoever's in power at the time is going to say, I'm sick of this. We need to stimulate the economy. It's in my best interest. And they're going to drive his ass out. And the Fed is going to start dropping some more. And then you'll start to see it. 2026, that's a little ways out, though. So.
Yeah, but there is so much of that $4 trillion that they created over the last few years. There's still a lot of it out there.
Yes.
It hasn't been spent yet. And that you can't tighten money supply until that's gone. And that's why I understand what you're saying, but there's so much this administration is doing not to help out. And we need them to get on the same page. This is back in the 70s. If you go,
what do you think they should be doing right now?
They should stop spending is what they should be doing. And any of the extra money they have left over for COVID is what they should be using to do stuff with. There's so much money still out there. And I don't have the exact dollar, but I'm just telling you, I've talked to a lot of people. I got all these stimulus programs and I still have that money, but they're trying to get me to spend it. And back to your statement about when all these companies were laying off and whatever, there's still 9 to 10 million jobs out there that's mm-hmm. available. And I tell people,
you're making 200 G's as a tech person. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to go start busting tables? You might have to, right? We'll see.
Yeah, but see, you didn't let me finish there, but there's 10 million. But the problem is, they say a third of those aren't really there. They're there, but they're not going to replace it, right? That opening's there, but they're not going to replace it. When we 2008 and when we've been through any other recession, that we didn't have a positive job market where you could go get another job or a third job or whatever you needed to keep going. We didn't have those jobs. But if you look at the amount of people that are getting employed recently, it's for a second job or a third job. It's not just I'm getting another job. And that's what the problem is. There are just jobs out there people can jump on. I did loans for people who were working for Facebook and Oracle at the same time as a full-time job and making $150,000 for each place.
Each job, yes. Yeah.
And did Facebook and Oracle know the person was doing both gigs?
No. A lot of them didn't.
Because they can do each remote one in working. 4 hours.
Yes, yep. That remote work is fucking gone. Listen, I am an equal opportunity basher here. And Jake put me onto this PBS show, documentary. And the real problem started when Trump came in and they were raising rates and Powell was doing it. And all of a sudden the market's freaked out and Trump says, you got to stop doing it. So it's very political. So he injected himself into this. And then I'll give him a pass because COVID happened 15 days to flatten the curve. 3 years later, everyone overreacted with that. I get that. But then what ended up really happening was, why did you wait so long to raise rates? Because the elections came in 2022. So we couldn't have done it sooner. So here are the consequences of that happening, of raising rates from, you know, whatever it was, 0 to 4, whatever they went up to, like the biggest rate hike. Because 7%, Jake is like going, those traditionally average interest rates over the last 80 or 90 years. So it's not like they're super high. We're just used to 0% with the Fed, and we're just used to that. And that creates risk. And that has these private equity companies going out there.
Everything is financed at 3.5% to 4.5%, and you basically double that. That's extreme pain.
In such a short amount of time, that's the problem. The markets didn't get a chance to react. All of a sudden, these stupid banks that don't know what the hell they're doing because they're employing idiots, because you're going long on T-bonds for 10 years when you know rates are going up in the next year to two. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out if you've been through.
Nobody believed they were going to do it. That was the thing. Nobody believed it was actually going to happen. They can't do it. How many times did you hear they can't raise rates? They can't raise rates. There's too much debt. They can't raise rates. Dude, people were beating that drum for fucking 4 years. And then they did. And then the people that went long got effed.
Yeah, but there was more problems with that bank than anything else. Not just that. They're so into the ESG stuff, which environmental, social, government issues. The only reason that bank got bailed out, do you know why?
I mean,
to the max. You know,
are you saying
our governor
saying
has three wineries in there?
Ooh,
he yeah, called
don't want
the president
that jacked up.
He didn't.
Wait, can you say that again? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What did you say?
Our governor of California had three of his wineries in their accounts in there, and all of a sudden he called the president and says this needs to be fixed, and they said, okay, instead of the 250, we're going to go to the max. The other issue is, besides that, there is a, and please, I'm not getting political, but there's Chinese companies in there also that have accounts in that bank. So,
wow. I mean, but the thing that bothered me about that bank was I'm thinking this through, because he sells his stock 3 weeks before. Nobody says anything. $3 million. The Friday that they go insolvent, everyone gets their bonuses. I mean, there's no accountability. There's no, okay, a slap on the wrist. No, instead, they're rewarded for it. So that's the problem. So these two banks that are too big to fail, they've been around for 40 years. That's the issue that I have. And it's like, okay, made a mistake. And
whoever approved those bonuses should be in jail. There's no doubt. Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Let's talk about, in the book, all the different programs. So people who don't know all these different programs, the FHA, the VA, the conventional loans, talk about the different ways that people can get into and buy a home.
Well, if you don't want to put any money down, you have two programs. You have VA, which you have to be a veteran, you've been in the service, and it's a, you know, and then you can be a reservist, but there's other things you have to add on that to make sure you can do it. My son's actually active duty up in Alaska. He's an airborne medic. He's getting transferred to Washington State to JBLM, and now he's going to be buying down there because there's no money down. When we sign on the line, I'm a vet also, that's our down payment. Easy program. They changed it 2 years ago. Totally different program, not the old program that used to be, which is hard to take on a house. It's the easiest program. It's just like taking a conventional loan now. So there's no reason not to help a vet out and take that offer over some other offers. The other 100% program is USDA. This is throughout the whole state of California. Oh, I'm sorry, state of California, United States. It's a rural program, but it's 100% financing. So you just have to be, you just go to usda.gov, put in the address or whatever, and see if that program is available. It's a great program. I use it a lot in our, not in my area, but in other areas around us that's more rural. Then there's the FHA program, which is 3.5% down, which allows for not perfect credit. Okay, that's the program we use that for. That's not just for first-time home buyers. That's for any time, but it is a max, and it goes max by your county. Then you have Fannie and Freddie. Fannie and Freddie, conventional loans, they start off at 3% down for first-time home buyers, and that means you haven't owned a home in the last 3 years, okay? Mm-hmm. And then you can go 5% down or 10% down or 20% down or whatever you want to do. There are other programs like CalHAFA, that's the California program, but there's other programs like that in other states where they help you with the second to pay for your down payment. There's a lot of down payment assistant programs now. The biggest problem with us and where we are, you're going to have 10 offers on there. Down payment assistant program is the worst offer. Why? I got two offers that are cash, and I got the rest of them other programs. They're going to take the other programs first.
Mm-hmm.
So the down payment programs work real well if you are in a house that's going to be sold, and the investor, in the person, the landlord says you have first right to be able to buy this house.
Gotcha.
So there's a lot of programs. I didn't get in depth in the book because I tell people it's not about you understanding all the programs. That's what somebody like I do, mortgage people, because it changes daily. If you don't like it today, don't worry, it's going to change tomorrow. And the most important thing is understanding your closing costs, how we look at assets, how we look at credit, how we look at income. That's most important. And I'm going to give you an example. So I sent my book to my son, told him to read it, and my daughter-in-law, who I actually married them last December, and I said, read this book so you understand the program. They didn't read the damn book. So they're running into issues, and they're going,
why would he read it when he could just ask dad?
Right. Because it's an easy read book. I made it so easy to read. I didn't want a War and Peace, and I didn't want a pamphlet. I wanted it in the middle so people would pick it up and read it. And I'm sorry you guys don't have your copy. They're in the mail. I didn't know I was doing the podcast so fast.
I got the PDF, baby. I read the PDF. I mean, if I can read it in 2 or 3 hours and understand it, it's really a simple book. And even just gives you ideas. If you even a higher level, it just makes you think outside the box. So many different programs. You've got history in there about what happened. And it's always important to look back, because when you can look back at certain things, well, you can sort of predict what's going to happen to the future. So to me, it was a really really important book to understand. I'm going to give my copy to my son. But before we go to the short answers, last question. If I'm out there and I'm in New York or I'm in Florida, what do I need to look for an Ed Parco as far as a mortgage broker? What qualities do you need to have to help me out to buy a home?
First, I would say make sure they've been in the business about 10 years because they've been through rate changes. Right. I was at Rotary a while back and they had a guy talk from the college, and then he brought up one of his assistants who helped him. He's like, I'm a mortgage broker. And he's like, you guys saw the movie Glengarry Glen Ross?
We've seen a long time ago.
Yeah. And he goes, I used to be a salesman. Good. Well, basically, that's what this guy said up there. He's like, I've never seen rates like this before. And that was only when they were 4%. They didn't go, you know, and a few of us in there who are in the business looked at each other going, okay, this guy just doesn't get it. Average rates are 6% for history. We were in a pandemic and we all thought we were going to die. That's why rates went in the twos. We need another thing to where we're going to die if we ever going to see those rates again. We never want to be there, but that's why the rates were so low when they were.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I just like, give me some mid fours. Just give me some mid fours. I'll take mid fours.
They're coming.
Crazy with it. Give me some mid fours.
Take the opportunities though. The opportunity right now in a lot of places, people are scared. You can get a house for a decent price and get help from the seller for your closing costs and other stuff. And that's what happened here in California. We're still in that market. We're still starting to see offers, but you're still at the point where, hey, I'll give you 15 grand towards closing costs and help you buy the rate down for a period of time. It's a kinder, gentler market for a couple of years.
Ed.
Or I should say 6 months.
But hang on.
Go ahead.
I'm in full force acquisition mode right now. So we just did 130 units. We're looking at, about 300 units right now. Because we just do apartments, right? Our personal homes are locked up and all that good stuff. So I completely agree. This is the opportunity right now to get out there and get some deals done. And we're doing, loan to cost deals where we got to go in and fix things up. So there's construction going on. And then when those burn off, I'm praying to God that I can refi out in like a 4.5% long-term fixed deal. That's the strategy right now. 100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We'll see that because one of the things I'm seeing that's about ready to drop is commercial. Right. Because a lot of people are still working from home. I know you said that's not. I still have my actual staff working from home and only like people like myself in the office because it's now at a point where they're able to stay home and not be bothered to get the stuff done in a short period of time and not have somebody stand at their door interrupting them or talking to them. They can get so much more work done. And I see that commercial is going to take such a huge hit over the next year because there's just a lot of it still out there, not fully utilized. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you guys in your area, but that's what I see in California.
We just do multifamily. So, the commercial stuff.
I know, but I'm just talking in general. I wouldn't be buying commercial. So, yeah.
I would never buy something that people didn't need to go to. Like, my whole thing is you don't need to go to the office. So, if I did commercial, it would be something like a barbershop was in there, a gym, a restaurant, something that people actually had to go there for a service that they're always going to have to go for a service. Right. You're always going to want to go out to eat. I don't think that's ever going away. You're always going to have to go get a haircut for the most part. So it's that type of stuff I would look for if I was buying commercial, but I like to keep it simple because everyone's always going to need a home. Right. And that's why we play in that space. Gina, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say Florida is sort of an outlier because there's so much building going on, the demographics, so many people moving here. Mm-hmm. I mean, during COVID, fortunately, we didn't shut down. So a lot of the retail, a lot of the strip malls did not go out of business. People did not close. Yeah. So and the thing with DeSantis, I'm not going to praise him. Well, maybe I should. But listen, the tourism.
You're so full of shit. Gino loves DeSantis like he loves his mother.
Yeah,
right?
I like DeSantis.
Well, let's be honest. The tourism here is off the charts. I mean, forget about Disney. Just people coming here and all that money that comes into here, they're going shopping. So retail and even offices, it's hard to get office space in Jacksonville and even St. Augustine where I am because people never really – they worked remote. But they're already back to work. And that's the thing here that we were never really shut down, whereas California was. And all of a sudden, for a year or two, you start developing those habits. Here, it didn't work as much. And I think that really helped the industry, the demographics, people moving here, the Airbnbs, people have vacation houses down here. So, I mean, for him, I think he's done an amazing job as far as that goes. But I agree with you. Self-storage is another industry down here where people are moving. They need self-storage because we don't have basements. So it's all localized. So My point to everybody is understand your specific market where you're investing in and what you need to do, because self-storage, maybe in the Midwest during a big recession, people are going to get rid of the garage because they don't want to pay $200 a month. But in Florida, you can't, because you got nowhere to put your crap, because there's no basements, and there's so many people moving in and out and in and out, that it's a really, I think, a really good niche to be in real estate in Florida.
Yeah, I think public storage is a good niche to be in anywhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because people put their stuff in there and forget about it.
It's great.
It's what they do. You get hit a couple $100 a month. What do you mean? Oh, we got a storage unit? Oh, we got to get rid of that. Well, not this month. Next month.
Yeah. You go clean it out. I did a whole thing on it. You go clean it out.
Yeah, I did a whole thing on public storage and cut it up, put it on TikTok, and that thing went viral. So if you ever want to put anything to go viral on TikTok, talk about public storage, because it's a great opportunity for people to get in.
Love that.
All right, guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
A question Gino and I get a lot is, what's a great value add?
You've just closed a deal and you're looking for a way to maximize the attractiveness of your complex to potential renters.
At Rand Property Management, we start at the bottom. Literally, we start with the flooring.
And that means we start with a call to Christian Chapman and his team at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring. No one wants to deal with the expense and hassle of putting in new floors, and that is exactly why we turn to David's Abbey.
David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring provides a quality, long-lasting product at a great price. The wear layer and waterproofing that comes standard with all David's Abbey products will ensure you are on solid ground for years to come.
My favorite part of working with Christian and his team is convenience. David's Abbey will direct ship their product anywhere in the U.S., That's white glove service, folks.
And your installation team will love how easy it is to install. The next time that you're looking for a great value add, give our friends at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring a call and speak with Christian.
Or click the link in the show notes to visit their website today.
All right, we are back. When do you see supply catching up with demand? We talked about that a little bit earlier. Is there an inflection point in the future where you see, you know, new builds coming back on at a rapid rate and you know, basically being able to keep up with the demand for homes?
Well, I think it depends on the area, right? Yeah. In California, we have not built anywhere close. Plus, it takes us anywhere from 10 to 20 years to build a track through all the processes that they have to go through, make Holy sure that we shit. Didn't move this certain beetle or something out of that area.
So you'll never catch up. You're like, oh, we're good.
No, we're good. That's why affordable housing, the only way to build affordable housing is to build more housing. And that's our problem. We can't.
Yeah. The only way to get there is to build it 20 years ago.
Because you got
to
build more houses, right? More housing will stop the value going up. We went up 22% a year over in 2020, 2021. And so from 19 to 20, 20 to 21, and 21 to 22, we went up 22% each year in value. So in 3 years, 66%. So people's houses almost doubled, right? And you know, $150,000 to $200,000. Average person has $300,000 in equity of their home because of how their appreciation went up. So there's a lot of money there, but we need to build 17 million homes over the next decade to get caught up. We're nowhere close to that. Nor will we get there anytime soon. And then there's another problem coming if we did get caught up. If you look at the pandemic, more babies were born than the baby boomer generation during that period of time. So you figure if the average age usually used to be 31 years old for people to come out and buy their first home, I think it's getting younger. But if you look at that, if we get caught up in 10 years from now or whatever, that we're getting closer to that next generation showing up that needs houses, and it's just as big as the baby boomer, and we're not going to have enough homes for them either. So this is a perfect storm, what we have going forward, to a point where I know in California, we're never going to get caught up. I know in Las Vegas, they recently had an issue with a lot of the new builds because they had a lot of on the market. Well, they're going to get through that, and next thing you know, it's going to change, because a lot of people went from one place to the next, moving away. We're already seeing people coming back to California, because one of the issues that California has, other than any other state, is amazing weather. or if you don't have it where you live, it's only 30 minutes away or an hour away to get to wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. We don't have humidity. We don't have these big bugs that attack you when you're out on your porch. We don't have certain things like that. We don't have mosquitoes. We don't have certain things. So I see that.
Yeah, but California, you're not going to be able to eat beef anymore, and those bugs are going to become valuable.
No,
all right?
You're going to be able to eat beef forever.
Huge source of nutrition.
There's some people who don't.
Getting those Geno dragonflies down there vegan. In St. Augustine.
Well, being a vegan, they find out that a lot of women find out afterwards that it destroys their face. They lose the muscle on their face from being vegan, and they don't. It takes them after they figure it out, and so they stop being vegan for a while. So, yeah, exactly.
Sell it to her face.
Well, you can cut that out of the podcast, so I don't get in trouble.
Never. We won't cut shit out. Maybe.
So perfect storm. Yeah, if you're an investor, keep buying multifamily, keep buying everything, because everybody's going to have to rent in California. Eventually, 70% of the people will have to rent.
That's where I wanted to go next, because the interesting thing is, let's talk about the future of home ownership on a percentage level, and then also, what happens when the baby boomers start to die off? Because that's going to free up some supply, and there's probably going to be a transfer of those homes to the kids. So, you know, just how do you see that impacting things? And then do you see a decline in home ownership also because, like, the Blackstones of the world and the private equity buying up tracts and doing the build-to-rent model?
Yeah, where we are, you're going to see the values get to a point where people can't afford. Right. And that's going to push those people into Pottersville. Wonderful life. Anyway, and that's what I see going forward is we're going to see more types of places like that where people come to rent and they don't come to buy because they just can't afford it. As you say, there one in four tracts that are being built today are built to rent, the whole tracts. They're not. So, and also one in four homes that are built, one of those homes is built to rent. So that's our biggest issue. And you're right, because there's all these companies who are doing this and then they're selling it to Blackstone, or they're doing these different portfolios and going, okay, I'm going to sell this to Blackstone and take my out. And that's, it's going to affect everywhere. And the question will be, will our government in California step in and stop that? Right. They have some type of rent control in general in California, which means you can't raise the value, you know, your rent a certain percentage, you know, when you transfer that home to the next person. So what happened is when they're trying to protect somebody, and this is always this way, what are the five worst words that you could hear is, I'm from the government, I'm here to help. And they came out to help people with renters. And the issue is now what happens is every year the landlord has to jack up the rent 8-10% automatically. You can't go,
yes,
I got a great renter, I'm not going to raise my rent because they're such a great renter. You can't do that. It's automatic now. So the government got it, came in and go, I'm going to help you, and they hurt you. And that's mm-hmm. our problem. And they try to do this stuff because they just don't understand how the system works. It's the same thing they did back in 2008, when, you know, 10, whatever, they got involved with our mortgage industry going, we're never going to have this happen again. It's never going to happen again because the rating agency that rated those bonds rated them wrong. Watch The Big Short. It talks about that all in there, about how it was, they're rated as AAA when they should have been D's or E's. And if they would have been those, nobody would have bought those mortgages. Mm. So the government's always late to the party, and then they try to fix it, but they make it worse.
I agree
with
that. That's
my opinion.
The book, again, where can folks get the book? Best place to get it?
Anywhere online,
et cetera.
You can go to Amazon, look for Ed Parco. If you don't remember that, you can get edsbook.com. Make it easy for you. Get edsbook.com. And that takes you to my website, and you click on the button and it takes you right to Amazon. You can have Barnes & Noble online. You can get it anywhere online.
And if they want to get with you for one of those 4.25 mortgages that you're selling right now, how do they get a hold of you?
Just go to edparco.com or go anywhere.
You didn't say you couldn't do it, Gino.
Go to anywhere social media. I'm Ed Parco. Very easy to say. But that's edparcaut.com.
G-Daddy, bring us home.
Ed, I love the book. It's a great story. I think anybody who's looking to buy a home, first home, buy it for your kids, buy it for yourself. I know Ed's got a couple of podcasts. He's got real estate shows. He goes live as well. And that's something I think if you're uneducated about the mortgage industry and what to look for and how to buy a home, go on and start listening to it, because there's going to be an opportunity. We always say, Jake and Gino, you can always buy real estate. You can't always sell real estate, but you can always buy real estate. Learn how to creatively finance it. Learn how to use one of these programs that Ed's talking about, whether it's FHA, VA, USDA, all these acronyms. There's so many different programs out there for you. But if you don't know, then you're stuck with fear and you won't take that action. So it's incumbent upon you to learn how to do this, because I know there's a big disparity in wealth between certain different demographics. And the biggest difference is one owns their home and has equity and the other one doesn't. I wish the other one would learn how to buy homes and start creating equity through home ownership, because that's the first step. Once you have equity in a home, you can pull that equity out and use it to start a business. And that's what Jake and I both did. We had equity in our homes. We bought multifamily and then we're off to the races, refinancing. So that's just one option. If not, you can build equity over a lifetime. When you retire, you can sell that home and there's your 401k. So Ed, I just want to thank you for being on. It was just an awesome show. And I think there's a lot of stuff that's negative, but I think there's still a lot of stuff that's positive, we all have the opportunity to make money in this economy. And I think just go out there, learn how to buy a home and start building wealth for your family.
I agree.
All right, guys. Hey, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's a G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.